Hello and welcome to another episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives. My name is Diana Isaacs. I am joined with my co-host, Natalie Bellini, and we have a lot of exciting things to talk about in this episode. So we're going to talk about a brand new CGM experience. It is called the BioLink, and it received FDA De Novo classification for the BioLink Shine. And why this is so new is this is actually an intradermal CGM. So it doesn't go into the interstitial fluid. It is just going into the skin. And Natalie, you want to talk a little bit about this? Because it's truly a very different type of CGM. And it's really exciting that we have this new classification.
Absolutely. Thanks, Anna. So a couple of things. First of all, age 22 and up. With T2D, not on insulin. So think about our other biosensors. They're also all about not on insulin, right? When you're on insulin, you need to know an exact number, speed and direction of change, if you're actually low, those kinds of things. And this sensor is actually, unlike traditional filament-based sensors, right? There's a filament that goes under your skin. BioLink Shine is like this intradermal microsensor array that sits right at the skin and is placed without even an introducer needle. I'm super excited about that. As a person who's used introducer needles for a long, long, long period of time, this like gave me like a breath of fresh air. I was like, you're kidding me, right? Even though it's not ready for type 1 diabetes, I was excited that the technology is there to measure glucose at all at that dermal level. So that's number one for me. So it's less invasive user experience. I know occasionally when I see someone with either pre-diabetes or type 2 diabetes, you know, when you put a loner sensor on someone, hey, try this for 2 weeks, they see the needle and they're done, right? Because they don't understand the benefits. And so this may help us get to people who are just absolutely no injection, no needle ever, right? So it's less invasive. It's like these, and what happens is it's like this multiple biometric signal in a single patch. So more than one thing is going on, and it has a built-in LED display, and it's color-coded that provides feedback right on the sensor, which I thought was really intuitive and just different, right? So it's going to be classified as a glucose range monitoring system rather than a continuous glucose monitor, a glucose range monitoring system. So if you think about what that means is it's not going to give us a number. It's going to give us a color. So blue will be in range, 70 to 180. So you could be 75 or 175, and it's still going to be blue. So again, for a lot of people, that's okay, right? At least to get us started in the goals of getting more time in range. So blue, you're 70 to 180. Yellow, you're above 180, with an option to flash when you're very high, which is a greater than 400. And then red for below, less than 70. Although this shouldn't be that often, because people that don't take insulin don't have a lot of lows, unless they're on a sulfonylurea, right? So this is pretty interesting, pretty different, pretty novel, very interesting, actually. They report that they've been studied in 80 clinical trials across thousands of people with millions of hours of human data. So, and one of the things that I was especially impressed with was the number of people that were ethnically and racially diverse, including 24% Hispanic, 6% African-American, and a significant representation of Asian American people. So, you know, we struggle in the United States getting other people, ethnically and racially diverse populations, to sign up for studies because of some of the history in studies in those very specific populations and abuse. We got people to do this. The data looks really good, and people really liked that dual display design, that LED plus app, right? So, Anna, what do you think?
Well, this is definitely a very new type of CGM. I guess we can't even call it a CGM, right? It's not necessarily a continuous glucose monitor. But I think it's got a lot of potential. And one of the things I'm excited about is its potential to measure additional analytes in addition to glucose. So you could think of use case for something like maybe ketones, which, you know, hopefully we'll be seeing in the future. But even like electrolytes, like just other things that could be measured. And then I'm also really excited to hear about the app experience, because my understanding is that they'll be integrating other data, like with physical activity and sleep. And so I think that's going to be really interesting how this whole experience comes together. But I think making it simpler for people, it's a great idea. I mean, there is data overload sometimes, and sometimes too much data. People are like, what do we do with all of that? And so this idea that, you know, it can keep someone safe, let them know if they're getting into the higher range with a simple color-coded system. So I think it's nice. It'll be, it'll just be really interesting to see, like, when this is available and what types of people might choose to go with a product like this, as opposed to more kind of traditional sensors, like wearing a lingerie.
Right. I have someone today that is using metformin and one of the once weekly GLP, right, injectable medications. And so she was looking at her, and we had put her on a sensor just to see where she was, right? She's a Medicare patient. It's not covered by insurance. And her first thought was, well, I need to be flat. No, you don't. You don't need to be flat. People with diabetes aren't flat. So maybe taking out that, well, if I do a little bit here and then they start cutting carbs and then they walk 10 miles, like, it's almost, this might be a relief for the worry, you know, the worried well that wear sensors, right? I need to stay in that blue range. That's all I need to do. My numbers don't have to be perfect. And I could see that that is a place to start. I'm interested in to see how much more accurate that we can become so that other people can take advantage of it as well. So I think,
yeah.
Rating as a first go, right?
Right. Well, that's the thing, right? This is a first go. So we always learn from that first experience. I think things that ultimately I'd like to see is that the app would include specifics on the numbers, even if it's not updated every 5 minutes, but kind of having that number data as well. And then one of the things I think in the future that would be nice would be having that option to go to a tighter range of 70 to 140. Or at least being able to differentiate if a person's in the 70 to 140 versus 140 to 180. Because depending on where someone is in their diagnosis, like brand new onset type 2 diabetes, or even if this eventually got used for people with prediabetes, for example, I think it would be really nice to know if they're under 140 or over 140.
Absolutely. And you can, you know, we've talked about this before on our podcast. You can sit at 179.5. And yeah. Be in the blue, and you can sit at 71 and be in the blue. And so both of those, depending on the person, could be not a great place, right? So is there a little bit more titration? And that would be, as if you and I could design next gen products, but still keep our day jobs because we love our jobs, right? That would be where you and I would both start, right? Because I would want to know if the person's spending all of their time a little bit too low. Do I get to back down medications, or is it just right where the body's set point is that we don't need to do a thing, right? That would all be, and I can't wait to look at the downloads, right? What are we going to get to see with that too? So super curious, super excited, because it is new technology and more to come, I guess.
Right. So stay tuned. Intradermal CGM coming. All right. So next topic we want to talk about is, I'm debating which one I want to do next. I'm going to do the weekly insulin. So we have talked about weekly insulin before, so not a new topic per se. We're excited. It hopefully will be coming eventually. But in the past year or two, insulin Icodec was submitted to the FDA and unfortunately was not approved. There were some concerns about hypoglycemia compared to other long-acting insulins. So what is new and what is very exciting is that Novo Nordisk has resubmitted insulin Icodec, but this time specifically for type 2 diabetes, which I think is so smart and probably what should have been done originally, because that's honestly like who's going to be more likely to use weekly insulin anyway is probably going to be people with type 2 diabetes, where you're not needing to make as many like immediate changes. And also the risk, right, honestly, of hypoglycemia is a bit lower. Now, this insulin is already approved for use in Europe and in Canada. So this would bring what other people have all around the world finally to the US. So what do we think about this, Natalie?
I'm super excited, right? We know that we are waiting for Lilly's approval for their once weekly in the United States. They have submitted. So, you know, when we look, it used to be the U.S. got everything first, right? That's how it worked. But now we can look at a dozen different countries, right? Canada, the EU, Japan, Australia, Switzerland for both type 1 and type 2, and China for type 2. So the idea that we can't get it, we need this, right? We need this. And we've talked about all the reasons why a once weekly would be easier. A person with dementia, you don't even bring the insulin into the house. You give it to them once a week, you walk away, right? You give them a GLP-1 to go with it. We should be good to go. For a lot of people with type 2, that's what we do, right? And plus or minus a little SGLT2 inhibitor, right? Those kinds of things where it's like the disease burden is a lot for someone to take it every day. We could set an alarm. You give your once weekly GLP-1 and you give your once weekly insulin, you're good to go. Like there's so many possibilities of things that we could get to work, right? And we could use these medications to get people to goal. Because remember, in the United States, we're failing people, right, with diabetes. Lots and lots of them are not at goal. And there's this disease burden that we talk about. This is, some of this is due to disease burden, right? So I'm excited. I'm glad they just dropped the type one. Let's get the first one through. Let's get used to it. And then let's look at other countries and learn more about how they're using it in type ones and decide if they're going to resubmit.
Right. And I think, you know, hopefully the plan will be. I know that they're doing ongoing studies in type 1 diabetes again. And I think with this just being such a new insulin, we're learning how to adjust it, how to titrate it. Typically, it started with a loading dose and then a maintenance dose. And so one of the things they're going back and looking at is, hey, could it be titrated a little bit differently to reduce that risk of hypoglycemia when used, especially in type 1 diabetes? So hopefully, ultimately, I'd like an insulin approved for everyone. But I think the first step is let's get an FDA approval. And then we always know we can prescribe things off label as needed. And I can think of several use cases in people with type 1 diabetes where I would love to have a weekly insulin. I mean, unfortunately, we have several patients that have A1Cs in the 15, 16, 17. And it's like, we just need some insulin. Like if they could take a once a week insulin, we could probably get their A1C down below 10, right? That's a starting place, right? So I just think it's really like, we really need it. Like it's a necessity.
Right. And when someone like that, when someone with type 1 who you know, doesn't make any insulin, or even with type 2 who makes very little or no insulin at the end, and they struggle getting that injection in. Well, if you only have to do it once a week, and if you miss a day, you can go the next day instead. Family members, home health nurses, all kinds of different support people can go in and do that for them and really make it not such a burden for that person. And then we can keep them out of the hospital without ending up early stages of kidney disease, heart disease, stroke, you know, all the things that go with that. So I'm very excited that we just need our hands on it. We just want our hands on these weekly insulins from both companies, from both Lilly and Novo.
Yeah, right. So we're waiting on Efsitora Alpha from Lilly.
Right.
So both would be very welcome. I think though, there still are, I mean, it's not like all rainbows, right? There are some hypothetical concerns that one that I can think of is like, okay, someone's using this, then something happens or hospitalized. Like we don't know when their last dose was. Nobody knows in the family. And so we're trying to figure out how much insulin is still in their system and kind of how to react to that. But, you know, we'll figure it out. It's just
out of box down, you're going to have a procedure where a lot of times we'll say, take, you know, 20 or 30% less of a daily basal. You're giving weekly insulin, even cutting back that 1 week isn't really going to make that much difference, right? But what I can say to all of that is other countries are doing it and they're doing it successfully. So instead of deciding we're just going to figure this out, we're going to call our friends in the other countries and say, how do you guys do this? What happens when you do this? How has it worked for you? Because they are using it and they're using a lot of it. So I think that disease burden and convenience for the person is going to outweigh the fear of, oh no, how do I get a knee replacement? Or, oh no, how do I, because they're doing it. So I'm excited to work with our other partners and we're going to have, you know, like talk to our friends at EASD, talk to our friends at these other organizations that are using it and are super comfortable doing so. So I'm excited.
Yeah. And I know like a lot of these same concerns were with insulin degludec when it first came out.
Right.
Oh, that's got a longer, you know, 36 plus hours half-life, and that's going to be in the system for so long. But we, you know, it really hasn't been that big of a deal. It's
right,
been
exactly right.
much more helpful than it's been a concern.
Right.
Starting people on pumps, though, that will be interesting.
I bet they've done that too.
Well, you can always hold the dose. You can try to hold it, skip a week or whatever. We'll figure it out. But yes, having more options would be great. People could take their weekly insulin, wear their BioLink Shine sensor. They will have all the new things.
So there we go.
Now, let me tell you one new thing that people with diabetes won't have, though. So getting into our third topic, and we were surprised to hear. So bimagrumab is a new drug that is being studied with GLP-1s to basically preserve muscle mass. And it was studied with semaglutide, and results were presented at ADA, which was very, very impressive in terms of its ability to basically preserve all muscle mass. So still promote weight loss, but the weight loss then is fat instead of losing muscle. So this sounds like, I remember when we were talking about it, but post-ADA, like this is like this is like sci-fi, right? This is like out of a movie. This is incredible, right? That'd be the dream drug, right? So naturally, we're very excited to hear it's being studied now with tirzepatide. And Lilly owns the rights to this drug. However, we received the somewhat surprising news that the study in people with type 2 diabetes with bimagrumab and tirzepatide has basically been discontinued. It is not enrolling. It will not be completed. And so we will never get to see the results of this trial. So, yeah.
So let's talk about it, right? So I think there's, you know, Lilly's actual quote was for strategic business reasons, right? And you know, details remain a little bit unclear, but, you know, specific causes, limited efficacy, safety, or less than expected demand or therapeutic need are unclear at this time. We don't know. So we can't surmise what that would be, because then we're putting words in people's mouth, right? So, but a business doesn't do things when it looks really good, unless it's not looking as good as they thought it would, right? For whatever reason, you know, there is always concern with weight loss that some people have more muscle mass loss. And we talk about our patients when we start them on GLP-1s about doing, you know, we have bands in our rooms that we say, get a band. They're very inexpensive. You can travel with them. You could have one here. You can do your arm flapping. You can do legs. You can do it anywhere if you're, you know, watching TV, whatever it is, right? I actually use bands when I do some of my conference calls at through work, right? So it's very important to maintain that muscle mass, right? And they were studying it for that. And then they decided, maybe it wasn't, you know, appropriate to do so. So remember back at 2025, though, with semaglutide, it demonstrated greater weight loss in people with overweight or obesity, but not with type 2 when compared to placebo. Alone, 10%. Semaglutide alone was 14%, right? So I just don't know if there's something missing that we're not going to know. And the challenge with pulling a study is what? You never know, just like you said.
Well,
So I'm kind of glad they're not bringing it to market or continuing a study that it, like, maybe we just need a different molecule.
Well, so a couple thoughts here. So it is still actually being studied. Bimagrumab is being studied with tirzepatide. Just there's a separate trial in people with obesity. So they only pulled the type 2 diabetes study. So I'm hopeful that this still is a good molecule. And perhaps it really is business reasons, like running two trials like that side by side is expensive. And if it performs really well for obesity, which is a huge market, maybe they just felt like deprioritizing type 2 diabetes, which is still disappointing, because ultimately, if this drug works and it gains the approval, I would like to see it approved in people with type 2 diabetes as well as people with obesity. And I know that the conditions often overlap, but the reality is that when a drug doesn't have an indication for type 2 diabetes, it's harder to get it approved for someone with type 2 diabetes. So I, you know, it'll be kind of interesting what happens with that other trial to say if it is, you know, the BELIEVE study also didn't include people with type 2 diabetes. And we know, like, weight loss is different in people with type 2 versus without.
Right? That's exactly it. So maybe it's not as efficacious in those with type 2 diabetes, but they're looking at the obesity and overweight diagnoses and they're saying, wait, it still is, you know. And remember too, this phase 2 trial has 240 patients in it for the obese and overweight population. So, and it is expected to complete in January of 2027. You know, you pull a trial because it's not doing what you want it to do. So I, whatever reason, right? It's not, it, they just don't like what's happening. So to me, it's one of those where there are going to be drugs. You know, right now we have semaglutide with two different brands for overweight or an, you know, for overweight with a comorbid condition or obese, right? And then we have the same molecule for diabetes, right? We have the same with tirzepatide. We have an overweight and obese as well as a diabetes. We might now start with this more precision medicine, having some drugs that aren't approved for both, that maybe this drug will only be approved for overweight and obese populations because it just doesn't, it doesn't give the zam that we needed it in the diabetes population. And to me, that's okay, right? I want every drug that I pick the best drug for the patient in front of me, right? That person with either overweight or overweight, obese, and type 2 diabetes, right? So there's potential here for it to actually end up being a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, there definitely could be more in the pipeline, but I'm still, I guess I'm still stuck on, I don't know how far they actually got because the study started in May. Like, I don't even know if there was enough time to really assess like how efficacious or not efficacious. I guess like I'm just hopeful that it's an amazing molecule and it still will have promise and maybe someone someday will study it in type 2. This is me like trying to stay really optimistic because I know like companies do different things for different reasons. And I also feel like Lilly has the tempo button, which holds amazing promise for connected pen insulin delivery, but they also chose for business reasons to kind of deprioritize that and focus on other things like the GLP-1 GIP landscape. So I guess the point is we will never know, or I don't think we'll know, but someone knows.
There we go, right. But we're clinician in clinical practice, right? There we go. Yeah.
But at least like it's still exciting. It's still being studied for obesity. And hopefully, you know, we'll learn more in the future about it.
Love it. Right. So, yeah, we've got BioLink, you know, our new glucose range monitoring system. We've got Icodec. It's gone, you know, that is back to getting, you know, resubmitted to the FDA. And then we've got Lilly discontinuing the diabetes part of this trial, right? So three pretty big announcements this week. Pretty exciting.
Yes. So with that, we thank you all for tuning in. And that concludes this episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspective.